Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Isabel Hardman. And we are 6 days into lockdown. That's right, it's not even a week yet. Yet already the government is talking about tightening restrictions over concerns that the lockdown is not working, which is partly, they think, down to low adherence among members of the public. James, what type of measures do you think we could see to tighten what's already a fairly strict lockdown? And when exactly do you think this might happen?
Yeah, so when Fraser and I interviewed Matt Hancock for Magazine last week, he was saying how his biggest regret about the pandemic was some of the kind of unintentional consequences of the first lockdown. He cited people not going to people's funerals, for example, as an illustration of that. But I think one of the problems you get into is when you try to make lockdown more humane, you introduce support bubbles, you try to keep religious services going, you have childcare bubbles, all of these things at the margins have some effect. And right now, hospitals are, as Chris Whitty, the chief medical officer, has been out on a media round this morning saying, are under huge pressure. Now, given that we know that there's normally a 2 to 3 week lag from measures to those measures translating into an effect on hospitalizations and the pressure on the health service, I think it would be slightly premature for the government to tighten up restrictions. But, you know, I think one thing that you've not lost money against, betting against in this crisis, is that the government saying it's not going to do something and then feeling that the sheer force of the number of the pressure on hospitals forcing it into action earlier than it wants to.
Isabel, one of the things that the government and health officials seem particularly disappointed in the public on is going for walks while holding cups of coffee. As it stands, are you allowed to go on a walk without any refreshments or food because that counts as exercise, but they see that as falling into socialising? And do you think that's something that the public are going to accept as a key difference?
I mean, we've already seen a little bit of tightening on that with takeaway alcohol because people weren't going back to their homes to drink the booze. They were sitting on a bench outside with a friend and therefore risking further transmission of the virus. So you've had alcohol, takeaway alcohol banned. But now, as you say, there's the discussion of whether going for a walk with a cup of coffee really is exercise or not. So we're back slightly into Scotch egg territory, aren't we, where there's a lot of splitting hairs. But at the same time, there's also frustration. And we've seen that from Chris Whitty on his broadcast round today and his Sunday Times intervention yesterday. Frustration that people aren't following the guidance that's already there. So people who are sticking to the rules, but just are taking coffee with them, are at risk of being penalised because of the failure to follow the rules of a lot of other people. I have to say that I was out and about over the weekend and saw a couple of shouting matches between members of the public who clearly felt that they were following the rules and groups of people with groups of children who were out for walks as well. So that I think there is a sort of wider cultural thing going on where people are looking at a long lockdown and feeling like this lockdown has already been quite a long one already, even though we're not quite a week into it, and seeing other people who still seem, as Chris Whitty has been warning this morning, quite relaxed even about the new variant being transmitted. So there seems to be at the moment an emphasis on trying to get people to panic a bit and to take the spread of this new variant seriously. And I think we will see a little bit of a reaction to that in the next few weeks, as hospitals are now inevitably going to be in a serious crisis in the next few weeks because the die is cast on hospital admissions already, even with lockdown. But it's whether there'll be enough of a reaction from the public to prevent, as we were saying, further restrictions.
James, do you think we're seeing lockdown fatigue? One thing I've definitely noticed is some of that goodwill seems to have gone away, but also there's just the sense among people that over the past few months, there have been such severe rule breaches by not just, you know, public figures, people know, whether they're close friends, people down the street, that suddenly a small breach is seen as less of an issue. So do you think that's playing a factor in this?
I think the problem is, once you start putting exemptions into the rules, which there is clearly a case for it, in that I don't think it's reasonable to say to people who live on their own, for example, that you're expected to go until the middle of February without seeing another human being in person. As soon as you do that, then people start kind of applying their own logic to these rules. I mean, there's another issue, which is the government think that the number of people who think they've had COVID is twice the number of people who've actually had COVID. And I mean, there's probably another... Anecdotally, there seems to be some people who think they've had COVID and basically think there's therefore not much harm in them meeting up with other people who've had COVID and that causing some complications. And then I think also the other problem is that people are not... The government is asking people to do this for the third time now. And that obviously becomes harder to do because... And it is harder because the time of year makes things more difficult. I think in the first lockdown, the weather was more friendly to it, if you see what I mean, than it is this time round. I mean, it's a harder time to be locked down. So I think all of these things are difficult and tricky. And I think the kind of question now becomes, is this new variant so transmissible that almost no set of rules other than kind of Wuhan style bolting people into their houses, which I think is something that public would, for obvious and understandable reasons, not accept, going to be enough to kind of to really get it under control. But I think one mildly hopeful symbol is that the Zoe numbers, which have had a decent record at predicting some things before they happen, suggest that the lockdown restrictions are beginning to have some effect on the number of new infections in London right now.
Isabel, brighter news is the vaccine rollout, though there's still plenty of criticism there. We are being treated as of today to daily vaccination figures. The government, Boris Johnson, has promised to give this update. We're also going to be hearing from Matt Hancock later about how this is going to be rolled out. Do you sense that this is a good news story or that ministers just really want it to be one?
I think it's a bit of both, really. I think they want to have something positive to talk about. They've wanted to have something positive to talk about throughout this pandemic, and finally they actually do, and in that they can say, oh, you know, today this many people have been vaccinated and it shows that we're just getting closer to the end. And you can understand that in terms of encouraging people to stick by the restrictions, that, you know, they don't have that much longer to wait, they just need to hold on, look at how many more people have gone through the vaccine rollouts. So there is that. I think also it's a political thing in that Conservative MPs, as we've discussed on this podcast a few times, have switched their focus from opposing current restrictions to saying, look, that the restrictions need to end as soon as possible, and we're going to really put pressure on the government over the rollout of the vaccine programme. And so the more ministers talk about the vaccine programme, the more their focus appears to be on it totally, and hopefully the more they can placate Conservative MPs for a little bit longer. Obviously, one of the variables, as you reported in your I column last week, is if hospitals are overwhelmed and the NHS goes into even worse crisis, and that does affect the rollout of the vaccine as well, thus prolonging in a very vicious circle sort of way the pandemic overall.
Yeah, James, and as Isabel touches on, how much of a factor do you think is the fact that hospitals either on the verge of being overwhelmed, we're hearing some are overwhelmed, is going to play in terms of the easing of restrictions? Because ultimately, while lots of Tory MPs are focusing on the vaccines, the government is not making decisions solely on reaching that vaccine target. And secondly, if hospitals do reach such a point or infection levels continue to rise, it's going to make it logistically harder to ask lots of vulnerable people to go to hospitals or various vaccine centres where they're going to meet more people, when probability-wise, it is increasing in likelihood that they're going to meet someone who may have the virus.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the challenges of vaccination, right? Which is they want everyone to stay for 15 minutes after they've been vaccinated to check that they have no ill effects from it. At the same time, they want to vaccinate as many people as possible. But if you take Barking and Dagenham, where the estimate is that 1 in 15 people might have the virus, and you're trying to process large numbers of people, the kind of challenge there is obvious. And I think you're totally right, Katie, that the decision on whether restrictions are eased or not will be a mix of the speed of the vaccine rollout and the pressure that the health service is under at that moment in time. I think these daily numbers are hugely significant, though, because one of the things they will do is they will put pressure on the delivery of the vaccine. We all know that the government needs to get up to 2 million a week. And I think if not this week, but if next week, they're not close to that, I think there'll become huge political pressure for the government to do more, to find some way of distributing the vaccine quicker. I think the government has made a calculation that the pressure this will lead to it being put under will actually help speed up the process. And I mean, that's why they're doing it. And I mean, and also, as Isabel said, I think they hope that they can encourage people to comply with the restrictions by saying, look, we're getting closer and closer to being able to lift these. This is one last great effort.
Now, Isabel, meanwhile, we've been hearing from Keir Starmer this morning. What did the Labour leader have to say?
He's giving a series of sort of vision speeches over the next few months. And this is his attempt to move on from just talking about competence, as he has done so far throughout his leadership of the Labour Party, and try to introduce what he stands for as Labour leader. And he's talking about the cost of the government dithering and delaying in its COVID decisions to the economy, to families. And he's trying to talk about the importance of families as well, and also trying to move Labour on from some of its previous quite awkward positions on business and trying to make it seem more business friendly, although I have to say I'm not entirely sure how business friendly and how much of a break with the past you can have if you've got Ed Miliband as shadow business secretary and being a key thinker on all of this, but we'll see. He has slightly reinvented himself since he was leader of the Labour Party. So that's what Starmer wants to talk about, that his aides have been very keen to emphasise that when he talks about the importance of the family, it's not a sort of socially conservative, you know, mother and father and children. It's an inclusive vision of families, and it's about household incomes.
And James, just on Starmer, he's also been making comments on Brexit and how Brexit is completely over. It's so over. We're not going back to it. Do you believe him?
I do, in terms of the short-term politics of it. There is a review of the Brexit deal up in 2024. It's a political choice for him to say, this is unchangeable, we're not looking anymore. But I think it is all of a piece of his attempt to try and reconnect with those votes that Labour lost at the last election. You know, the other day when he was addressing the country in response to Boris Johnson's broadcast, he had a kind of Union Jack behind him. A recent Labour Party political broadcast had, you know, soldiers in it, or lots of other symbols of patriotism. And I think that you should see this speech as part of this attempt to reconnect with those voters. And I think that, you know, I think the argument those around him would make is, look, we don't look at the margins by which Labour lost some of those seats. You don't have to win those votes back wholesale. You just have to eat into those Tory margins a bit, and then some of those seats become winnable. I mean, the interesting question politically is, he is betting when he says, I'm not going to look into reopening free movement, but those kind of younger, more metropolitan Labour voters aren't going to go to the Greens or the Lib Dems in protest at this policy. And I think he is essentially betting that they've got nowhere else to go, or that the seats where they are most common, Labour hold by such a large number that he can afford to see the majorities slip a bit there, because he'd rather put some votes on in key marginal seats where this message might be more appealing.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Isabel. And thank you for listening.